This is Darcy Ungaro, and welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. Whether it's in property, Bitcoin, shares, or business, this is a show designed to equip the everyday Kiwi make better investment decisions. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. Please remember, none of this is financial advice. We hope you enjoy the show. Hey, it's your host, Darcy Ungaro. You're listening to the NZ Everyday Investor. Really excited to have Kristen and Natalie in the studio from Hatch Invest. You're going to enjoy this, and I'm going to encourage you right away up front that if you know of people who have vaguely thought about investing, but they feel locked out, not locked out financially, but locked out because they feel like they're playing a game that they're not invited to play. They don't know the lingo. They don't know how it works yet, and so they haven't even bothered. Well, this is for them. Forward this on to them, because this company, Hatch Invest, is doing good things. They're not the only ones doing this, and they certainly won't be the only ones ever to be, but they're breaking into the worlds of everyday people. Everyday people who haven't bothered with investments, they're starting to crack that nut. There's not a lot of jargon in here. We're pitching this to the everyday person so that we can all have the same opportunity to get access. Truly, this is about the democratization of investing. Hope you enjoy. Without further ado, let's get stuck into it. So welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor. I'm your host, Darcy Ungaro. We're in the studio today with Natalie. What's your last name, Natalie?
Ferguson.
Natalie Ferguson.
Natalie Ferguson.
Welcome, Natalie. And Kristen Lundman. Now, Kristen isn't a name that we see too often in New Zealand.
No.
Why is that?
Well, I'm from Canada.
Maybe that's why. So we'll get into that in a minute.
Just
so
call her Kirsten like everyone else.
Kirsten? Or, yeah, it's like it's Kristen.
Yes, Kristen.
That's right. Let's keep it real. Let's keep it authentic. Yeah. Let's keep it exactly what it is. Yeah. So, Natalie, for the listeners, your background, tell us about where you came from.
I have a slightly different background than most people. I started my first startup in university, or slightly out of university, on the tail end of university, and have sort of spent my life doing my own thing. I've never had a full-time job before Kristen suckered me in and got me working on this about a year ago. So I have always worked for myself. I've always been really excited about products and UX and sort of structured things. I had a design business for a while, but have otherwise structured things so that I can always be doing side startups as well as learning as much as possible about how business works across a range of different companies and industries.
Right.
Super fun.
So when you were doing your formal education, you were doing real world education as well.
Yeah, I didn't really like the formal education, to be honest.
What were you doing? What were you studying?
I studied a whole range of things, from psychology to philosophy to history to economics. I studied everything because nothing really stuck.
Wow, okay.
And then left after 2.5 years, which I still feel bitter about because I'd rather have made it 2 years, with I think something like a production line management degree because it was the fastest way to get out. Yeah, didn't have a great uni experience.
The fastest way to get out of university.
Yeah.
Sounds like my university, yeah.
Know a lot about production lines, which actually does somewhat come in handy with last
So that minute. Kind of multicolored education that you got is actually quite useful for being an entrepreneur.
I don't know how useful some of it was, but a lot of it was. But yeah, understanding about workflows, maybe.
Yeah. And being a UX, so UX for the listener is?
Yes. Well, actually, it's kind of interesting because when I first started doing design work, UX wasn't even a term. So I'm not a huge fan of it in general. So basically what it is making things really easy for people to use, making people feel smart when they use a range of products, not necessarily just on the internet, not making people feel stupid, and designing experiences that are fun and engaging and exciting. And then they went and lumped a term on it to make it sound more technical and tricky than it really is.
Yeah. Stands for user experience.
User experience.
Yeah. I
also have a problem with the word user. You're not a user. You're a full person with all different things happening in your life. You don't live in a vacuum using my product.
Yeah, but what a good way to frame this whole topic of investing in that. Let's make it easier for people to engage
with it.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's perfect.
Mm.
Cool. All right, now, Kristen, tell us about your background.
I'm pretty much the opposite from Natalie. My parents said right from the beginning, you're going to university. And I had two options when I graduated high school. They said, you're going to be a journalist or you're going to go into business. And I traveled a little bit that summer and I didn't want to move away from home quite yet. So business school was the most obvious. At the time, there were 4 to 5 year degrees. That's quite traditional North American university. So I did that. And then I combined university and travel. So I made sure I studied a year in Mexico. I traveled around. I actually went to a couple different universities in Canada. Canada. So combined my love of travel and uni. But once you leave university in Canada, what's different here in New Zealand is people go on their OEs. And in Canada, you say you're grown up. You don't flat anymore. You get a corporate job and you work your way up the corporate ladder. At that time, those were the early days of Silicon Valley, which hadn't really spread. So I remember thinking probably 5-10 years ago, I was born at the wrong time because I would have loved to be in that heyday of Silicon Valley. I probably wouldn't have done uni. I would have joined a startup and gotten real life experience. So I did the uni thing. I did the corporate thing. Spent a lot of time traveling throughout North America with my jobs. And then I landed in New Zealand 9 years ago now. And that's when I had been in digital, but that's when I moved into the startup space and really discovered this love of the small underdogs looking to make a big impact. I suppose it's a range of things from the great equalizer, and so that, you know, democratizing access to things and reducing the cost by leveraging technology, which is a big love of mine. So I ended up in startup space, and then I've moved into corporate innovation. So I've kind of combined these two things of corporate and startup together, and that's what we're doing with Hatch, actually, ironically enough. It's a startup inside a corporate, but it's been an interesting journey to get here.
Yeah, and it's funny how when you're in business and when you're starting something new, you often, I guess when you're going through it, when you're going through your training or your background or your experience, you often look at it with some disdain, like it was kind of a waste of time, and this is frustration that you never really felt like you were in the right place at the right time. But now, arguably, you are. Right? And arguably your background is perfect for what you're doing.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I've mixed feelings on university because I've got kids, and everyone asks, oh, what do you feel about this traditional university path? And there was this movement in Silicon Valley where people were being paid not to do university and actually develop skills on the job. And so I still question the relevancy of some of the things I learned. I remember in my fifth year of university running companies, you know, fictitious companies, and turning these companies around. Well, my first job out of uni paid next to nothing doing database entry. And I thought, what have I just done for 5 years? I remember calling my mom saying, why am I in debt? This is ridiculous. But I do look back. I think I had a fantastic time at uni. I made great connections. And I did learn a great deal on how to approach and view different things, from research to, you know, studying for exams and preparation of stress. And I joined a lot of varsity teams, so sport was a really big part of my life, and that facilitated those things. And so you're right, I don't look back and regret anything, but it's interesting now that I've got these kids, and do I want them to follow that same path? What does that look like? Because here in New Zealand, I think there's a lot more freedom not to do university or to do condensed schooling or to do practical education and through various tech programs. And I think, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll have to help my kids through that in a few years' time.
And I'm interested, Kristen, just with your perspective, seeing as you've come from the Great White North as well, and I'm interested just to get your feeling on, or your angle on how you view New Zealand as an environment to create something out of nothing, as i.e. business and in a startup. Do you feel like in New Zealand, it may be easier to do what you're currently doing versus where, if you were trying to do this, say, in North America?
It's easier and harder. It's easier because New Zealand is one of the most creative planets on Earth. I trust there's probably, Stockholm, Sweden, you know, and there's some cities and countries that are probably known, some of the smaller ones, Israel, for example, known for really very interesting, creative companies in technology and design. And I think coming to New Zealand, we were blown away by the schooling system. I remember sending my kids to kindy and walking in, and there's these children that have got hammers and nails. Well, that wouldn't happen in North America, in litigious society. No, you couldn't have anything unsafe. There were kids jumping off. I remember a broken arm when I was there doing a walk around because a kid was jumping off, you know, 6 feet boxes stacked up, and my kids would come home with these random, I would show up at a table and I said, oh, what's the craft for today? And there's art supplies, and everyone looked at me like I was crazy. What do you mean, what is the craft for today? Because we're ingrained to follow step one, step two, step three. Again, it's that schooling, university, corporate life, marriage, kids. You follow this real North American recipe.
Don't forget death.
That too. Let's not talk about that. And I remember seeing this really messy, unorganized, chaotic environment in where these Kiwi kids are brought up to problem solve and to be creative and build bizarre things and bring them home and fill up your garage and your car. And I was really impressed. I've been really impressed with the level of boldness in what Kiwis are developing at the bottom of the earth. We know it's a DIY culture. A lot of people have to build it themselves, leverage their own smarts. But I think it's harder on the other side of things to actually scale a startup from here.
Sure.
It's not a large population. Yep. We have to spend a lot of time on planes, going overseas, learning from those markets. If you're not in the markets, you need to learn as much as possible. So I think that can be really challenging from New Zealand.
Sure. Mm. Enter in software as a service as the great equalizer in that space as well, right?
Yeah.
So, Natalie, tell me about your feelings in terms of...
Talk to me about you.
So I'm feeling pretty happy this morning.
Are you really?
It's despite the rain in Auckland and Wellington. How are your feelings?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Thank you for asking. I'm feeling a little bit stressed because of the rain, because of the traffic. But it's important to talk about our feelings, isn't it?
It is important to talk about our feelings.
Yeah. Let's highlight what the problem is, because in New Zealand, I think that there's a problem in the space that we're talking about right now, which is investing, and arguably, let's call it the democratization of investing, perhaps. Mm-hmm. There's a problem in this space, and it's a problem that I'm trying my best in my small part to try to solve by breaking down the barriers so that people can talk freely about investments and normalize it, mm-hmm. make it not some rich, fat, balding dude's job and domain to play in. Mm-hmm. Why can't I, as a dude, be a feminist, right? Mm. You know, it's kind of that whole concept, flipping it around. But that's the problem that we're trying to solve, is breaking down that barrier. And what do you think Hatch in particular is doing in that space? And what do you think the problem is from your perspective that you're trying to solve?
I think the problem that we're trying to solve, our perspective of it has probably changed quite a lot since we started. Obviously, New Zealanders aren't overrepresented in investing statistics around the world. We shy away from the share market. We overinvest in property. What we found, we started out by doing hundreds of interviews with hundreds of everyday New Zealanders. We talked to people like you. We talked to different groups of people. And now, obviously, we've launched a product that has helped us understand the problem a little bit differently. So I think we do have a couple of myths in New Zealand about why we don't invest. And we've been telling the same story for so long that we don't even realize we're perpetuating some myths around investing. So the 1980s stock market crash, huge deal in New Zealand. We apparently haven't recovered. Look at the problem differently. New Zealanders only have access to invest in the New Zealand share market, the Australian share market, and property, unless you're a rich person. So what else are we meant to do? And the New Zealand share market is tiny by international standard. The property market traditionally seems to have gone up, so people feel comfortable with it. I think the problem in New Zealand that we've discovered is more a problem of access than it is as a problem of apathy, which I think is what we've all been told for a long time.
Right, okay. So the myth is...
just, we're apathetic.
Yeah, but
and
in
there's
reality,
definitely
it's
a group of apathetic people. There's also a cultural issue. I've been talking randomly to a couple of different South Africans, and they are living in New Zealand, and they said they were shocked when they moved over. In South Africa, when you open a bank account, you're basically told open a mutual fund at the same time, start investing from your teens. It's a normal thing to do in South Africa. Mm. And I was diving down with them into why do you think it's so different in New Zealand? When you arrived here, there was no such thing. And managed funds are once again, until recently, only been the realm of people with money already. To be fair, their reasoning was they don't necessarily trust their government to provide for them. So in some ways, it's a really cool thing that in New Zealand, we don't grow up with this attitude of if I'm not looking after myself, I will be destitute in my old age. So that's pretty cool. But what that's meant is as we grow up through these generations, and it will be different now with KiwiSaver, but we are not ingrained as a society into investing. And one of the other things that I heard recently that blew my mind was someone saying, why on earth did they brand KiwiSaver KiwiSaver? And you're teaching generations of people that your biggest investment is a savings account. And coming from a nation where savings accounts have been one of our largest investment options available to us, that's sending a really bad message, which is obviously reflected now when things are dropping, that people are still surprised. I have a friend who is looking to buy a house, and she said, my KiwiSaver's dropped 10%. she wasn't expecting it because it's a savings account. Yeah, so it's the myths and it's the not educating and maybe the fact that we live in a wonderful country where you don't have to fend for yourself so much.
Yeah, well, and do you think maybe that's going to change at some stage, perhaps?
Potentially.
And maybe we should change our views on investing as
absolutely.
A result.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think one of the things we've started to talk about a lot is our perception of money. And I think part of the joy of living in a country where people are well looked after by each other and the government is this kind of slight underhanded view that money makes you greedy or wanting to have money makes you greedy. It's an awkward thing to talk about. One of the things I have always felt as someone who has never had a full-time job is money buys you freedom. Leaving university without a student loan gives you the ability to make life choices that you don't have if you're $100,000 in debt. One of the interesting studies that from Canada was the 1970s when they trialled a universal basic income. Led to a huge increase in divorce rates. Why is that? Because suddenly women had the freedom to leave bad relationships. So I think this myth about money being bad versus let's change that attitude into money, all money buys you. And there's all sorts of studies on it. Once you can get past being able to go out and buy whatever dinner you want and go on holiday once a year, literally all money buys you is freedom. Freedom to make choices and to live a better life. Mm. If we start looking at money like that and investing like that, how much more fun is that than the idea of, oh, I'm funneling money away to be this greedy person who doesn't look after anyone.
Well, that just comes from a scarcity mentality, right? Mm. Like if I've got it, then it means you don't have it.
Yeah.
Therefore,
yeah.
I'm being greedy.
Yeah.
But absolutely.
Dare I say, there's probably more than enough to go around.
Yeah. Oh, and one of the cool things about opening up international share markets is, hey, we can start to get profits from overseas into New Zealand. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. We can actually participate with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. That's a really good way of articulating, you know, one aspect of that, what that problem is, right? Mm. So there's a few myths. And we're perpetuating it based on the language that we use and just the assumptions that we make.
Has anyone even done research a lot of the time, you know? And I think we're starting to get some really interesting stats. And we were operating under very similar myths. And we thought our target audience was going to be this very small, fairly well-off, highly motivated group of engaged investors. And what we found is that audience is, in fact, a lot bigger. And it isn't actually broken down by money. There are people who have a small amount of money who have a huge desire and haven't had access to the sort of tools and investment options available to help them learn.
Correct.
And they will choose us over investing in things like smart shares because they see the opportunity to understand how to research companies and make wise investing decisions.
Right.
We thought that was the realm of the slightly richer. It's not.
Yeah.
It's probably just the realm of those who have a strong desire to create wealth. Mm. They're curious and they're open to learning.
Yeah, and even not necessarily focus on creating wealth. I mean, a lot of people do have a slight focus on it, but people are quite happy to make investment decisions just to learn. They're not worried about initially even if you're dabbling with $1,000 or $2,000, does it matter if it drops a bit? I'm not talking about all New Zealanders, and we absolutely understand there are people living pay packet to pay packet and at some point want to address that unique set of challenges. But for now, when you're looking at people who are earning $80,000, $100,000, $150,000 who shouldn't be living pay packet to pay packet, a couple of $1,000 to throw in something like Tesla and understand all the different things that impact your investments is a pretty cool way to learn, regardless of how much you're willing to start with.
Yeah, we found two things that the learners are doing, that early stage investor, because again, we thought very much we'd get these motivated investors. We're looking for people that had brokerage accounts, they probably got a mortgage, they're probably in a smart shares or an invest now. And what we found is actually there are a number of beginners and they're doing two things. One is they're throwing $1,000 or less into a given company to learn. And so they're understanding, they think, look, the fundamentals of this company make sense to me. If we take Tesla, for example, we're not recommending anything here. But what we've heard.
But you should totally buy some Tesla shares.
No, we can't say that. I'm not allowed to say that. But
are you allowed to say that?
No, I'm allowed
but
to say
I mean,
that.
The U.S. share markets are, and companies are highly volatile, particularly over this last year. And so take Tesla for an example. If you were invested at the start of 2018 and now, you would have been in for a wild ride and the share price would have been impacted by so many things from the U.S. economy to rising interest rates to the company fundamentals. You know, they had a very strong Q3, profits that were unexpected, revenue. So, oh, that's interesting what that does to the stock price, to analyst expectations, and right down to Elon Musk's tweets and his controversial personality. And so I think it's been really interesting. Imagine how much you could learn over that 1 year with a bit of money in Tesla. And then, of course, the second thing they're doing, which is a common approach here in New Zealand, a fantastic one, is exchange-traded funds. Mm-hmm. So we've got a number, you know, over 450 of those on Hatch. And people will say, look, I don't want to learn just with Tesla, but let me put it into some of these, some of the more highly popular exchange-traded funds.
Like sectors.
Sectors, yeah. Or index, or there's some really interesting, that's the exciting thing about exchange-traded funds, is they're now actively managed exchange-traded funds that are there just to beat the markets. They're there to, you know, ride along an upward momentum of a particular industry. So exchange-traded funds is certainly something we've, another entry point to those early-stage investors and right. aligning those to whatever their strategy might be. So it's interesting to see that.
Is there an ETF for almost everything?
Yes. Out of 450 ETFs, if you wanted to get into an exchange-traded fund, a basket of funds of cannabis, you can do that. And so there's fund managers. The largest ones that you'd probably know are Vanguard, BlackRock, Power, iShares, of course. And so what they do is they bundle up a bunch of these things. They know that they're on an upswing, this exchange-traded fund industry, because it's such an easy thing to get into and diversify sure. right away. So yeah. you could do that. She could say, oh, well, look, I'm into green and clean, and so I might Google or I might search on Hatch clean or environmentally yeah. friendly or right. socially responsible. And so I feel comfortable with investing in this thing because of this. Yeah. Or I know tech deeply, therefore I'm going to get into a technology ETF.
That would be, in my mind, that's probably one of the barriers that be analogous to a lot of people, where it's just too boring. Mm. I can't be bothered because it's just too boring. I'd rather just binge watch Suits on Netflix rather than learn about Tesla, right? Like,
yeah.
But if it's something that's quite congruent with who you already are,
I think like that's really it. Into it's it. Your interest area.
Yeah,
and what we found is people aren't using Hatch for their entire portfolios. They've got portfolios, but they're taking a chunk of money and putting it in to something they actually align themselves with. So yes. if I'm in the energy sector, I probably have a fairly good grasp on what energy is going to look like
that's
over
right.
the next 50 years.
Yeah, that's right.
And
mm-hmm.
so I'm already knowledgeable in this area, and I can seek out these trends that I'm well aware of.
And for someone like one of our early customers who works in hospitals, said they used all these products every day in the hospital, and they were starting to go, oh, I wonder who makes these. Oh, I can invest in the companies that I'm using the products every day, and I can see their future within the New Zealand healthcare
that's
industry.
That's a really cool example.
Mm. Pretty awesome. Yeah. Same cannabis obviously has been the word on everyone's lips for a while. You may not back a particular company. You may not want to look too deeply into the fundamentals of any particular company, but you may think, there is a huge opportunity in the cannabis industry for medicine, for all sorts of stuff. I just want to get into an exchange-traded fund and ride this. And so I think it is an interesting challenge, because we get this a fair amount from at least one side of most relationships, is that's investing right. is just boring.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't find it boring, so I find it really hard to... We haven't solved that problem yet of how do you get people who think it's fundamentally boring to find it interesting.
And that is one major theme that we've picked up on these shows. If you invest in something that you personally can, you get it.
That's it.
And you're into it.
Yeah.
Sweet. That's
exactly.
pretty much as complicated as it needs to get, because
absolutely.
You're doing something that's already aligned to who you are. You yeah. understand it. You can see it in the field working.
Yeah.
So buy into it.
And that was definitely in our very early research with people who hadn't invested before. There was this barrier of, I have to do all this research. And we kept trying to dive into what research? What do you anticipate having to research? We couldn't really tell if it was just an excuse because they were apathetic, or if there is this idea, yeah, when you start investing, you have to have this massive portfolio full of all these things and you have to invest in these really boring things. Or is it, I know this thing. I actually know it. I read about it in the news all the time. I use
that's
it.
Right.
I see it. I have an opinion. I'm a smart person. I can
yeah.
try and invest in this thing. And suddenly I'm kind of more interested in it.
Yeah. And there's different personalities. And that's the part
that's
that we often forget,
yeah.
right? Like some
yeah.
people are going to be paralyzed through over-analysis.
Mm.
Some people are going to be really apathetic and really chilled, and they're just not interested at all.
Mm.
Some people will see it as a means to an end, and some people will be all about the cause.
Yeah.
So is there four different modes, four different lenses for those four different people I just threw out there? You know, like, is there a different approach for different people? And that's, I guess, where some of the evolution will probably kick in and over in time, maybe there's artificial investment advice that gets given to people based on who they already are.
Yeah.
But I guess going back to that fundamental core of what are you into?
Absolutely. And there's different approaches to investing. And I think when we've launched, we've started with our starting point is those that are motivated. You have to be motivated enough to log on to the computer, to sign up, go through AML requirements.
It does only take 5 minutes. And it's all online.
It really is.
It is. But then you've got to shop. And I'm not suggesting it's hard, but there's an active component.
Sure.
You actually have to spend the 10 minutes doing that over something else.
Move your fingers.
But that was the Hatch starting point, is we were looking for those that were motivated to do that. What we have found is there's this growing group that want to be the set and forget. And that's probably more the exchange-traded fund group. And so they're looking to, look, I don't want to spend a lot of time doing this, but if I can just flow money through on a monthly basis through to Hatch and just set and forget, I probably won't be checking my portfolio every day.
Sure.
Might be once a week, might be a few times a week, but there's that group as well. And so we hadn't anticipated attracting those people initially, but we'll look to continue to solve their problems as well.
That's the beauty of what you're doing, is that it's going to evolve. It's
not
a fixed product, which is what it is.
Yeah.
So if I was, I've got a mortgage, I've got my KiwiSaver going on, and I've got a little bit left over in my budget every month, and apart from taking care of the family and going away on holiday every now and then, I want to build a bit more wealth for my future for some sort of reason. Mm-hmm. What are the current options available to me right now?
On Hatch?
Just in the industry? Yeah, like what are the current solutions to the...
You've got NZX, you've got Smart Shares.
Yeah, you have directly investing in companies and directly investing in ETFs and putting your money with a fund manager. And there's a whole bunch of different companies who do each of those things. I suppose the key differentiation between each of them is how manual the process is and how much it costs. So, for example, something like Smart Shares, which is New Zealand-based exchange-traded funds, are also available on platforms like InvestNow. Do the same old sign-up process, which I'm very sorry, if you sign up to do any sort of investing, you have to go through a little bit of pain these days. Yeah, so you can sign up on something like that and you just put small amounts of money aside. There's very low fees comparatively. If you want to sign up at the moment and invest directly in companies on the NZX, fairly substantially higher fees. And I think in some ways that's one of the things that might have put a lot of people off. I think the change in the conversation, another myth maybe that I think we're very keen on busting, is that concept of fees being the conversation, not returns. Mm. And I think that, to me, that feels like a very deliberate ploy by a few different companies to shape the conversation in New Zealand. We charge the lowest fees, you should choose us. We're actually a smarter decision is including fees, we give you the best returns.
That's a good way to frame it.
I don't see why, other than it's in some company's best interest to frame it like that. Yeah. So that's something that needs to change, I think, and that message needs to get clearer. But you do have a few options. You could also put it in a bank account, but one of the blog posts I want us to write soon is why a term deposit or savings account is the riskiest financial decision you can make.
Awesome. Conservatism is expensive.
May actually be losing money while you're putting money in there. So you have a limited but reasonably diverse range of options. We're starting to talk a little bit more about the investment pyramid, which I think is a really nice, simple way. Thanks, Jared, who's our head of ops, of explaining how you should put your money into different investments, starting at the top, almost like the food pyramid.
Okay.
Start with your very high risk.
Vegetables.
Yeah,
vegetables. Are really
I think
risk.
Vegetables are low
dessert.
Risk.
Desserts up top.
Yeah, your dessert. Sure. So that might
path.
Be. There's some Krispy cool
Kreme
stuff
donut
happening.
At the very top.
Krispy Kreme donut.
Nice.
Yes. So there's some cool things there that might be putting money in something like a venture capital fund or something that's which is at the moment pretty inaccessible, but there are a few things coming through.
Well, there's a few
through.
Platforms like Snowball Effect.
Yeah. There's a few things like that starting to come through, but you should put a very small amount of your money in that, because what might be very high rewards, they're aiming for maybe 1 in 10, maybe 1 in 20 of those companies to go wild. You don't want to put all your money in that. And then you sort of work your way down the pyramid, investing in direct companies, investing in exchange-traded funds, putting money in managed funds, that sort of stuff.
TDs,
and so that would be a nice, interesting way to kind of looking at how you could structure your money and sort of move some money up through that pyramid a little bit.
Yeah.
So out of the term deposits and more into some of the lower risks, bottom of the pyramid, and move it up slowly.
And we're actually guided by that pyramid, I think, for product development now.
Yeah.
It's like, because we're very much our... our ethos from the beginning is platform. We want to be brand agnostic. We want to list all sorts of interesting products and instruments on this platform and just have people come in and have really interesting options at their hand, world-class investments. And so taking that pyramid approach, we could list anything from on our platform from a venture fund right down to a TD.
Right.
And so that's how we're approaching, you know, building Hatch is by that same philosophy.
Because if you look at that, I think when you go to some platforms, there'll be a selection of options, but how unbiased is that offering really? Like how free are you really?
Yeah.
Because it's just a list of 12 different options. And I'm thinking Kiwi Wealth, sister to Kiwi Bank, surely there's got to be some sort of tie-in with their products and services. But are you saying that what the offering is on Hatch is quite open?
We're not constrained at all to offer Kiwi Bank or Kiwi Wealth products. And I think that's this bold new approach of platform economy. The CEO of Kiwi Wealth approached us and said, what does wealth look like in the future? And it probably doesn't look like you going to this bank to get this and that bank to get that. What you see with this open banking environment is this unbundling of the bank and the rebundling in a marketplace scenario. And in that case, you're going to have competitors sitting alongside one another. I think New Zealand was really small. And so when we looked at this, what would a one-stop shop for wealth look like, it having five of the same product that is largely commoditized doesn't make sense. So if we take this curated marketplace approach, what, again, based on this pyramid, it could be that you have some of the lower risk options are with a competitive product, but to open it up and have a very turn the traditional business model, whereas everyone that comes in the door buys your product on its head, and in fact it's a revenue share model or a partnership of some sort, that's what we were tasked to do. And so we've been given, you know, full freedom to go ahead and actually partner with competitive offerings, which is really brave.
But it's also one of the logical things about that, that I think going back to your discussion earlier about Canada, New Zealanders lack an understanding of scale. That's another downside to being in New Zealand. So I think we tend to, by accident, have a bunch of small companies squabbling amongst each other to see who's going to get the small market that currently exists. Whereas I think a much bigger vision and a much more sensible vision is how do we work together to grow this pie? Because New Zealanders, like we say, aren't investing as much as they could. There is a huge market out there. If we're all just trying to take each other down versus working together to grow the number of people investing, we all win. And smart industries have got that for years, and smart countries have got that for years. So I think for our vision and the platform economy vision is very much, let's grow the pie. Let's get people moving through and doing more stuff in this industry.
Awesome. That's cool. Now, you mentioned something interesting, Kristen, before, and I want you to help the listener to understand this a little bit. Open banking.
Yeah.
A little bit of a sidebar, but tell us what is open banking and how does that actually fit within what Hatch is doing?
So it really has to do with customer data, and it's your data and where does it sit. So currently it sits inside of the bank, and we know that data is the new gold. And once companies have their hands on data, they can tailor their offerings and you can start to get personalized offerings and marketing and so on and so forth. And it's why Facebook is one of the most probably, I'd argue, powerful companies in the world, because if you can imagine the amount of data, don't know if you're a Facebook user, that they've got and the billions of users they have on their platform.
Have you seen my cat videos on Facebook?
No.
The best.
I'm sure they're amazing.
I follow them all.
Yeah. So what in a financial sense, financial data, if you think how often you use your FPOS or your Visa card and you just get access to someone's transactions, you know everything about that person, from what they're making, what they're spending their money on, how they're investing their money. And so traditionally that data has been locked inside of the banks, and what these fintechs and tech companies are suggesting is that's customers' data, doesn't belong to you. We should be able to open it up and create all sorts of fantastic value on top of your offering that is customer-centric. And so we've seen this real push by the regulators predominantly in the US and the UK and Australia that said, look, we've gotten through this global financial crisis. Customers are losing trust that you are doing what's best for them. You're not placing the customer first. You've got all these financial technology companies, fintechs, that are coming along and saying, we'll put the customer at the center there. So the regulators are saying, look, banks, you've got to open up your data so that the customer, first of all, has ownership over their data. And if they want to provide it to a third party who's going to add value to their lives and solve a lot of their financial problems, it's time to do that. And so New Zealand, it's going to happen. It's fantastic opportunity for the fintechs to really add some exciting functionality.
These fintech companies that are just coming out of the woodwork, they're solving the problem on behalf of the consumer.
Yeah.
And it's like the walls have to come down now because it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Exactly.
As an advisor, we've been seeing this for, well, quite some time with some of the institutions that we deal with, where we place our clients with. There's a little bit of data sharing to us so that we can help better serve our customers. And I'm just trying to imagine how that would look like if I was an app or if I was some sort of bit of technology which was receiving the information from that institution and reformatting it to the client. You know, that opens up a whole world of possibilities when you can start connecting those pipes and bring it in. And beautiful scene of creative destruction just in front of your eyes, watching things being dismantled and reconfigured in a new, innovative way. And is that kind of where, Hatch, you guys see yourselves? Is that when the walls come down a bit more, do you see that innovation is just going to take the next level and or are you going to manifest it in a different way?
Well, that's the whole business model when you flip the traditional business model. So a bank, it works as this pipeline business. So it's we manufacture a product and we sell it through our own lines. And so anyone that, again, comes in our door, we sell them our product and we charge them a fee to do so, irregardless of if the customer gets value from all those little things along the way. And what platform will do is you say we'll bring people into our marketplace and have a very different business model in that people come in only pay when they get value. So they feel like there's this fair exchange of value in that marketplace environment. And it's very much like on an eBay or a Trade Me, it's like, I'll give you this much for that. And there's this feeling of fair.
It's an efficient market.
Yeah, it's an efficient market effectively. And competition does that in a marketplace. And how will we compete as Hatch if we build this marketplace? We'll probably clip the ticket on some transactions, but really important thing to do is add value. And how you add value to a person's life is by taking their data and doing something really interesting for them. So we might show them, look, this is your current asset allocation. You can probably save a little bit more money by doing this thing. And then how about you take that money and you put it here? But we can't do that without their data. And them giving it to us right now is breaking the law.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's weird egg. Everyone else can benefit from my data except for me.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem right.
No, and especially with money, but that's what data will do.
And the time and effort involved in switching to a better option is also, at a very basic level, you know, number of people who just lock in their mortgage and leave it there for years and years, or sign up to a credit card and don't change because they have to go through this whole painful process again. And like I said before about signing up to anything at the moment is going to involve a bit of pain. Open banking will mean less of that pain because you can now just, one thing's not working for you, something's a better value for you, you just switch to that without that huge overheads involved.
Yeah. And I just love that idea of me benefiting from my data as
Absolutely.
Well. Like I just think that there's something so obvious about that that we've missed and we've allowed others to benefit from our data for so long. Why not let it serve us?
And we start talking more and more about that fair exchange of value. And because obviously when it comes to things like Facebook hacks and people's data getting stolen, there's an immediate call to shut down the amount of data people give to places. But what we've learned and what's sort of becoming more the conversation is, what can you give me for my data? Mm-hmm. If I sign up to your platform, what will you help me with rather than I just give it to you and you do what you like with it and then maybe someone will steal it?
Or you sell it. Exactly.
That's right. Yeah. But why not let the marketplace come to you with unique offerings based on your data, which you've allowed them to access. Mm-hmm. But again, you're benefiting from it.
Yeah.
Maybe you get paid for it.
Yeah.
Who knows? That's quite cool. So, and in terms of flicking over to Hatch and just how specifically it's solving a problem, so you've created this startup inside a corporate incubator, if you like, or, you know, so there's benefits with that. Mm. I'm guessing funding, credibility, access to specialist advice, but there must be some difficulties in terms of butting heads with the status quo, and it's a corporate after all, possibly less nimble. But the fact that they've allowed you to exist within that environment says something about
it's
who
pretty
they are.
Cool.
It's been a journey.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. So tell me about how Hatch now that we've kind of outlined the problem and the other solutions, How is Hatch poised to really tackle this problem in a unique way?
You're right in that we can leverage the corporate brand. So we came in and initially we were housed outside the company and we had actually a couple projects going.
I love it when Canadians say housed outside.
Housed outside.
Out in the boat outside.
Yeah.
I personally don't hear it, but I'm sure others do.
Out in the movies,
I mean, that is a big deal for us. Yeah. The fact that people associate us with a company that is 100% New Zealand owned and operated. Yeah. You're not signing up to a startup that who knows who's funding it and
that's
that
right.
sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying that that's a bad thing, but we are hesitant with money in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And so you're giving
that has helped.
You're putting your money with the place that you already trust.
The Kiwi brand has helped. And so as for day to day, we operate exactly like a startup. You know, we've got similar culture and behaviors around and ethos and how we approach things and lean and agile and building only building the smallest possible thing to test it and metrics we use to help us build the platform. So we probably operate in a very different way than the rest of a traditional business. Kiwi
Not
Wealth
probably.
Does.
We absolutely.
We okay, we do. We operate very differently, but they are moving towards that. Yeah,
there's a lot of
strong
learning,
desire.
There's
to
a lot
do
of learning.
But they would be learning from
Absolutely.
You as well.
They're learning from
presumably.
Us, and we're in the space. But I'd say daily crossover is fairly minimal. We probably leverage the lawyers, the compliance AML officer, of course, and finance and HR. But in terms of our funding, we pitch to them the exact same way. I have to go to a big shareholder meeting on an annual basis, and I pitch, this is the investment that you're making in us, and these are the returns that you'll see.
I think we would run into the same challenges, even if we weren't associated with Kiwi Wealth, because I think most of the people who give advice on things like compliance and regulation are used to working with banks and traditional finance companies where you come in and say, hey, for example, recently, we want to invite more trusts. There's a few trusts in New Zealand who are really interested in investing in the US.
Right.
How do we make that work? And it blows into this giant picture of hardship and pain. And I'm sitting there going, we just want to do this tiny little thing for this tiny little group. Let's be agile. Let's and just the kind of shock and the desire to turn it into this 3-month project and reining it back into And I think that's been largely the challenge inside the corporate or outside the corporate. The people who are used to giving advice on this stuff are not used to working in this way. But once again, I think we work iteratively and they start to see these quick results.
If we start again with that problem, if there is a problem of wealth building and people doing different things with their wealth in New Zealand, we could have spent 3 years building the ultimate platform. Mm. And that is probably a traditional approach for corporate, is everything's hidden until it's ready to launch, which is why so many things fail in
gotcha.
The space, because
they don't,
it isn't
they don't
this.
Do beta.
They don't do beta, and even the word
they
beta.
They don't do small.
Yeah, they don't do small, they don't do beta, and we just said, let's just get this very first offering out into the market, and we can start to learn. But we still had to de-risk that much more than a traditional startup would have been, so we're probably 6 months behind anyone else that would have just pushed it into the marketplace. And so we've learned a great deal, and actually it's, again, very advantageous to be part of this corporate, but that was a very different approach, is pushing something that isn't perfect, that isn't polished, that hasn't been outsourced to this beautiful app design company.
Although people do like the UI. Thank you very much.
It is beautiful. It is
design.
Beautiful. Yes,
we
yes.
get great feedback.
We've had great feedback. but it was it's a different approach to solving wealth for a traditional wealth company. And so we've started with this one very small thing. And if you think about it, if you're not private portfolio client with a lot of money, and there's a real struggle in this country for people to think about their futures. And so all these KiwiSaver companies are thinking, how do I get people to engage with their KiwiSaver? Well, in our interviews, people aren't thinking of their retirement when they're 20, 30 years old. It's not until you're 55 and you have a bit of a panic that you're starting to really ramp up with that KiwiSaver
and
your retirement.
KiwiSaver is the ultimate set and forget. It just comes out of your pay packet.
So
why are we using that to engage
right.
more
so
people?
That's right. And so you can build all these experiences, which, to be fair, companies including Kiwi Wealth are doing, and they're doing a good job of it. But even in your 20s and 30s, retirement is such a... It's such a nebulous thing, isn't it?
You don't know when you're going to retire.
No.
You don't know how long you're going
to
retire for. You
don't
know how much money you need.
People don't even trust they're going to. They don't trust that KiwiSaver is going to be around. So people engage in these 5-year increments. Mm. So we thought, what is the most engaging financial tool on the market? Unsurprisingly, it's a brokerage account, because the markets move daily. People are checking their portfolios daily. It's unlike a KiwiSaver. So that's why we started to approach from that end, because we could have started with a budgeting tool, which Kiwis need. How do you build an engaging budgeting tool?
Have fun with that. Yeah. And we need it. I'm not saying that to diminish it, but it would be great if someone could solve that problem as
well. And you can, but you can only, you start with the stickiest stuff, the most engaging stuff, and then you start to build it.
Yeah.
That's the only way to do it. Because if you're building something that people are logging on once a year, you're learning nothing about them.
That's right.
And to be fair, you're helping them once a year, which isn't really that interesting. So that was the approach we took with more of a traditional brokerage account.
Yeah.
Because we felt this was...
That's the most engaging bit.
It is the most engaging bit.
So start there.
Absolutely.
Then fat it out later on.
We have people checking, on average, Hatch investors check their portfolios 2.5 times a day.
You're watching
them. So you've got
someone.
aggregate data. Aggregate data. Don't know their names, but aggregate data. And 2.5 times a day, you have someone engaging with something is a fantastic way to say, what can we get you doing next?
Mm. And like you say, we are watching. But the great thing about watching, if you have the right motives, and like we say, we want to grow the pie. We want more people to be involved. We're not the sort of group that's saying, oh, I don't want another competitor in the market. We want more competitors in the market.
So you're trying to grow the awareness in
that space. So the sort of data we're getting at the moment from even the first 3 months is showing us, like we said earlier, people aren't nearly as apathetic as we thought. What does that mean for giving people advice in the future or growing the pie? So it's kind of good lessons
for everyone. Or engaging those that are apathetic. If we can learn from those that are the most engaged, why are they engaged? Why do they care?
I mean, and that's the thing, right? Like if you're spending 2 minutes on that page, which has that information, what is there about that that people are searching for, and how can you amplify that?
Exactly.
And again, start with the engagement and then follow that,
and
see where that goes.
And one thing we are finding, we're going back to talking to our investors now, so we're having in-depth conversations with as wide a range of people as possible. Why is it that only one person in each household takes control of the finances? Mm-hmm. We have open discussion in the office because we're out there talking to people, and we're coming back and we're saying it's the same story over and over again, and we're asking them and we're asking each other. And if we can figure that out, really deeply understand why that exists, which I don't think we do yet. I don't think anyone does yet. And one of the other things we've learned from talking to a lot of people, we can talk to people who are, we have this investors club and it's super involved and there's people talking all the time about a whole range of topics. I will sit down and talk to someone from there who is actively involved in what is shorting stocks and all these crazy high finance level conversations and say, tell me about your investing strategy. And the first thing they say is, oh, I don't really know what I'm doing. And what I've learned is no one, I mean, if anyone knew what they were doing, they'd be a psychic and they'd be a billionaire. Everyone's still learning. And I think everyone positions themselves as the least knowledgeable. And for some people, that's an opportunity to learn. And for other people, that puts them off because they think they don't know enough to get started. So if we can kind of spread the awareness that no one knows what they're doing and you just have to get started and you're most likely going to do as well as anyone else because we're all learning.
Yeah.
I think there is this barrier to...
Yeah, there is. We're not allowed to dabble in this space. We're not allowed to experiment. We're not allowed to learn.
You're meant to know what you're doing before you get started, which is not how anyone learns anything.
Also, the existing offerings in the New Zealand marketplace weren't set up for dabbling.
No.
One of the common things we learned when we were initially interviewing people is they've structured their investing lives around the constraints of the industry. And so the minimums is a big one, and the fees were another big one, and clunky user experience. So it wasn't easy to engage with your portfolio, or it isn't easy, as it should be. That's one of them. The second thing was the sign-up process. I mean, we heard stories of people trying to sign up and had to get on a phone to do it. I mean, that's unacceptable in today's digital age. And then the final thing were the fees. And so what people do here is they amass amounts of money. Again, these are these motivated groups that we were initially targeting. They amass, let's say, $1,000 to $4,000. When they get that amount of money, then they invest it. And then they go do their research and pick. And that's absurd to be constrained by minimums and fees that is dictating your investing lives.
So the existing system tells them how to behave rather than them as an
investor.
I suppose these
products aren't, they're not mortgages, they're not insurance, they're not KiwiSaver, they're not the traditional revenue buckets of these incumbents. So they've been largely ignored. So I think that's where fintech has attacked this financial, this group of really smart, technologically savvy people who want to solve everyday problems that aren't being solved because they're not highly lucrative for a traditional corporate. So let's come in, let's attack around the edges. That's what's so exciting about fintech is that they're finally starting to solve problems for the masses. And I think investing is a common one. And we've seen some really exciting movements in the past year in New Zealand, which is fantastic. Yeah. And it's, again, largely ignored because they're probably not highly lucrative. They're just a lead-in to cross-sell other products.
Correct.
And again, to dictate your investing behavior based on that is ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And it's cool to see that there is this trend towards starting with the customer first.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Let's start imagine with the customer. That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Start with them first. What do they want? Mm. And design it all around them rather than, like you said before, there's this pipeline and we're just shoveling stuff through it. Yeah. And marketing's doing their thing. And
but that's disruption, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it starts at the edges and it will just support. I think there's a saying that says disruption starts slowly, then abruptly. And that's exactly, we're seeing that overseas. If you're to look for TransferWise, I mean, wow, imagine that, remittance, sending money overseas, yeah, and someone can actually come in and do it easily and delightfully. And, oh, who's going to do that? Everyone?
And imagine being able to travel without having to pay massive fees to get American dollars to go over to America.
Which I mean, now is TransferWise.
That's ridiculous.
Revolut.
When you think about it now, seeing these options coming through, think, how have we for so many years expected that to go over and have a holiday in Fiji, you're paying some company hundreds of dollars just to transfer your money?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But
we put up with it for so long.
We didn't question it. And now it's starting to, which is sort of going back to, do you think it's your career led here well, is we're perfectly placed now. We're on the brink of this whole new world of electric cars, cannabis industry, investing. There's so many things that are leaping forward at the moment that I think it's really exciting
to
see.
It is an exciting time.
So what about the fees? Explain to our listeners how it works. So I set up a Hatch account and I want to put in $500 and buy some Apple shares.
Yep. So the way we've done it can change in a marketplace environment. You can start to look to potentially subscription but again, we'll be very guided by our customers and we only want to take money where we provide value. But to start with this first partner, it's revenue share. So we have a real philosophy of transparency. So on our FAQs Help Center website, we lay everything out. And if there's something you don't know that we haven't answered, we'll happily throw that up there because we absolutely, particularly in this industry, value transparency with our customers and so with our investors. And so we're transparent about the partners that we partner with, how we make our money and what the fees are. Yeah. So you would put your $500 in, we will take your money, give it to our foreign exchange partner who then moves it into the U.S. for you and into U.S. dollars. And so
Invisible to you, by the way.
All of
you
it's
just
invisible.
Transfer it into a New Zealand bank account.
And you'll get it in next day as long as you get it in before noon. And they currently it's 50 basis points to do that. And which is quite cheap. That's much cheaper than an average bank transfer at the moment. Yeah. And so we just share the profits with, share a little bit of that margin with our foreign exchange partner. You'll wake up the next day and you'll have US dollars in your Hatch account. And then what you do is you can shop and you can invest. Now, the cool thing with Hatch is you can fractionally invest, which is you can buy fractions of whole shares. And that's important in the US market because there's companies that have share prices that are pretty expensive. And so Amazon, last time I checked, was just around $1,900. But even Nike at over $300. If you're looking to build a portfolio with your $500, you might not want a share in Nike to take up $300 of that $500. So what you can do is say, look, I'm going to invest in 10 companies with this $500. You might not do 10, but a fraction of a share costs $3. And so if you're just buying a portion of that, it's $3 USD. That takes right away at the time of buying. You just get the $3 taken off, and we share that margin with our broker partner in the US.
Right.
If you want to buy a
Your
whole
broker
share,
partner is
Drive Wealth,
yeah.
Yeah, they're a fantastic company outside of New York. So they're in New Jersey, and they recognize this fractional investing that people actually want to build these diversified portfolios and want the ability to do that. So they've delivered on that, which is really cool.
Yeah. So you're taking, so there's a bit of a margin or a bit of profit sharing on the foreign exchange bit. There's a bit of profit sharing happening on the brokerage.
That's
we're,
it.
We're talking about small numbers
it's
here.
Small
it's not,
numbers.
Not massive,
yeah.
But you're not getting paid a commission
There's
Drive
no
Wealth.
Commissions. There's no hidden fees. That's it.
It's two
just
places
those two.
We take money.
It's two places we take money. And I think we can keep it lean because we've heard people, how do you make money? How are you doing this? We keep it lean. We're going to always have a very small team and we leverage technology where we can.
And it's not a complicated model. It's fairly straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely. And that might change as we add more partners on. We'll try and simplify things, but currently that's what it is. It's simple. It's affordable. It's the most affordable way to access the U.S. share markets compared to your traditional New Zealand solutions at the moment.
Right.
And so
gotcha.
We've got an advantage there. And that
a lot of people probably don't realize that some of the fee-free options in New Zealand to invest in overseas markets, specifically with, say, ETFs, and you know they're getting paid a commission from doing that.
Yeah, well, there's hidden. I mean, in this industry is notorious for hidden fees, but also really poor user experience and complexities. If they're not looking to help solve your problems with tax or advice, I mean, eventually we hope to do those things really well. It ends up being scary, and you get yourself into some weird situations.
Right.
And the platforms are a lot of the platforms are actually pretty ugly, which again puts people off because your investing in shares experience should be very much like your online shopping experience.
Correct.
You should be able to enter.
Should get
enter
the same
store.
Shopping high.
Yeah.
And I think on that transparency front, and just going back to the 50 basis point fee, basis points is not a word we use all the time, and it is the one last remaining piece of jargon that we've
break
been
it down.
Forced to
Let's
use.
Break it down.
Basis point is basically just a percentage, and it's kind of an interesting part of the financial industry is there's 20 different words usually to describe the same thing.
Yeah.
So rather than saying percentage, it's basis point, but there is a reason for that. And while we try and make the foreign exchange fees as simple and as straightforward as possible, and we just link to an FAQ which shows the exact equation so that people can understand why it's called a basis point and not a percentage. And it's basically because it's on the exchange rate, which is to counter prices, so the New Zealand price to buy a US dollar. So there is a little bit of complexity there, but not an awful lot. But it does mean that we can't call it a percentage without giving the actual wrong idea.
Yeah,
so, and I think while other things, you know, we have shares, we have stocks, we have all these words for the same thing, we've really tried to remove that because, in an industry where fees are not transparent, neither are words. And I think most of the words people use. And I've always come from a philosophy, coming from an experience and making people feel smart using things rather than making people feel dumb. If you have a really ugly interface, 99% of people will blame themselves for not being able to use it. If you use jargon, rather than blaming you for not being able to explain it in simple terms, which as an expert you should be able to do, people blame themselves for not being able to understand the jargon. Yeah. So by default, and I don't know why, the financial industry has deliberately or not deliberately been trying to put people off, and our goal is very much to, you shouldn't have to know the jargon to get involved in it. And a lot of financial technology platforms are starting to and have that same attitude. Mm-hmm. So it is so much more accessible now than it was 5-10 years ago when I started.
It certainly takes a pragmatic lawyer though, doesn't it? Because all that stuff, it's a highly regulated, risk-averse industry because they get in trouble when things go wrong.
Well, and that's for real reasons. Absolutely. Like we've been talking recently, we have this amazing AML, and AML is anti-money laundering. It's all the stuff, the painful stuff about your income and how often you expect to trade. And for me, that's always been slightly frustrating to sort of have this without really understanding why. And we've been having these amazing conversations, and our AML officer was previously a police officer, and just talking about the actual impacts of what happens if we don't have these things in place and where some of that money goes. So when you kind of understand
why
have anti-money laundering and it involves drug pushers, human traffickers, that sort of stuff, you sort of start to go, actually, I'm kind of happy to tell you how much income I expect to earn in a year because I don't really want to be part of that problem. I want to be part of the solution. So,
and just do it in a friendly way then is the most important thing.
Yeah.
But a pragmatic lawyer, though, who actually questions why things are worded this way and is willing to work with us to remove the jargon and is a fantastic asset. Yeah.
Is there ever going to be a subscription-based offering where I could pay $50 a month to do some level of trading?
The reason we didn't start with that is because there's this idea of buy and hold and investing wisely, and there's this idea of trading, and we didn't want to. By going subscription, you're saying, I'm going to use it as much as I possibly can because I'm paying $50. And you might not be encouraging the best behavior. If we were able, it may be this pay-to-play thing where you would pay to come in and in a marketplace, and there might be enough value in that marketplace, and you could use anything how you wanted to use it. that would probably eliminate this idea of this trading and sure. undesirable behavior that as responsible, you know,
we take
from
that seriously.
We do take it seriously. We don't. So I could potentially see it in the future, but it depends on the value again that yeah. we're able to provide on top of yeah, yeah. overlaying all of these fantastic sure. opportunities.
Okay. Hmm. Makes sense. Who are you disrupting?
Maybe
who
ourselves
are we disrupting?
A little bit.
Yeah, well, that was an interesting thing
not
coming
disturbing,
into.
Disrupting.
Yeah, coming into a wealth company, it was this idea: if you're not comfortable with disrupting yourself, then someone else is going to do it. So this is what corporates are looking at: is we should probably have these innovation labs or accelerators, or should we look at an acquisition strategy to buy a startup that's looking to disrupt us? But what we found is actually we complement Kiwi Wealth. We're actually servicing a group of people who didn't have access to advice. They didn't have access to these fantastic funds on the platform. So we're not disrupting Kiwi Wealth, I would say, but we're disrupting those incumbents that are simply just ignoring their investors, I think. Again,
well, even our launch has led to more conversations about why do I pay so much to buy investments on the NZX and why do I? So it's sort of, I think we're disrupting the idea of the fee models and the options available. Yeah. The idea that in New Zealand you only have three options, we're disrupting that. We're disrupting the idea of how you access financial and investment options, the idea that you can have a fully fledged brokerage account, access to cool investments without having to fill out forms and that sort of stuff. So there's a huge amount of disruption.
Certainly not targeting one thing. We're just looking at this chunk of people to start with that are underserved.
Yeah.
And if they move from another platform to us, then I suppose in traditional terms, that's disruption.
Ideally, if they move from nothing to us,
that's
awesome.
That's everybody's winning. That's great.
And that's probably a big pond that you're fishing in already.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in that space where they're not being served by anybody. Yeah. I don't want to know them because they don't have enough to deal with.
Yeah. And that's fair. Yeah. There's different levels, right?
Yeah. And that's the way it is. And that's not... Yeah, you know, there's some reasons why it is the way it is like that, but it doesn't mean that there's not an awesome opportunity for somebody to solve that problem.
Absolutely. I mean, like, ideally for me, we're disrupting the property market, right? We're disrupting the idea that housing is an investment, not a home. And I think if we even have somewhat of an impact on the idea that you might have more options out there than buying another rental property.
Which isn't great for New Zealand.
It's not great for New Zealand. New Zealanders should be investing in growing companies, not building houses to rent out for a profit.
And we work with a lot of young people who can't even get into property. And that's
that change might just play right into your, you know, where you see things
Absolutely.
Going. It might not be instant, but I think you're probably going to see a lot of people, instead of investing in the next investment property,
That's exactly what they're looking to do.
Yeah,
because that they were viewing property as investment, but also a home. And so how can we, you know, make sure their money is working for them while they work their way through this
And while we are talking a lot about the US share markets, which is very, very cool, we're building a platform. So if you do have multiple investment properties and you are looking for different options, we're looking for different options too. So we're looking to see what is the other things that New Zealanders want access to.
Yeah.
We're smart people here. Going back to the myths, we're smarter than we realize. And I think even the number of people who came to us with the number of things that they'd been looking for overseas or who'd said, I have been waiting for someone to launch this for years, just goes to show there's a whole ton of world-class investment options out there that New Zealanders want access to. So we are more than excited about trying to
bring
more products on to the platform to solve a wide variety of problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, is there anything else that you want to say? Anything else that you want to impart to our listener? Those who are trying to develop wealth?
Don't constrain yourself to New Zealand options. I think there is a world of investment opportunities out there. So really think, look around you, look at the brands that you use every day, look at the news that you see every day. You know, media, largely, we're getting international global news. The world is actually very small. So be bold in your investment strategies as well, even if you're just starting to learn. So I'd say don't constrain yourself to the options that are available here just because they're available here. And also just get started with a small amount of money to start learning.
Just start.
Just start.
Don't underestimate your own abilities or intelligence.
Absolutely.
And realize that while you may not have read 1,000 investment books and done 500 trades on the share market, you are perfectly positioned with the knowledge you already have to make your first investment.
Yeah, that's really good.
And to learn as you go. Yeah.
That's got to be really encouraging to, I'm sure, a few people listening right now, listening to hear you say that.
And we obviously, small team, are all available to chat. We have a lot of people emailing us and calling us to just have a chat about, if nothing else, we'd love to hear from New Zealanders about, if you're worried about it, if you've never made an investment, we are very happy to talk to you, and we're not going to push product. It's just we really want to learn why. Mm-hmm. So
right. If it's a mutually beneficial exchange.
Absolutely. So if anyone is listening to this and thinking, I don't want to get started yet, I still feel nervous, let us know why. And nothing else, we can have a good chat about it.
That's right. And you might be able to solve a problem for someone else who feels the same as you.
That's it.
No, that's really good. And I like what you said about the whole, actually gave me a really good idea. I'm just thinking, if you think about Christmas and your birthday and every time that you get given something, if there's something that you really love, or if you really want to buy something, why not see if you could actually buy shares in
that? Yeah, hatch dollars. Do that. They'll be ready for next year.
Yeah. Oh, really? Is that really?
Slightly too late for next Christmas. I mean, they might be ready. We could have potentially had them ready for Christmas Eve, but it's slightly too late for them.
We launched 12 weeks ago, so it wasn't a priority at the time.
But it's what we want for Christmas, and it's what we want to give for Christmas.
Yeah. Stay tuned. Yeah. Stay tuned.
The ability to buy shares in companies that you love rather than the product.
We first thought, what if you could gift someone an Apple share, but then the lawyers got involved.
That's right. Yeah. Maybe so, you can
give money for people to invest themselves in companies.
Yeah, that's right. They can then choose. Yeah.
That's really cool. And instead of probably buy any commodity, right? But could you buy gold?
Yeah, well, ETFs, certainly you can buy. Okay. So currently it's just over 2,700 companies. Yes. Of course, some of those might be gold companies. Yes. And then naturally we'd have a number of ETFs that are exposed to gold.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Instead of buying your partner some jewelry, why not just...
Yeah, diamonds.
It's the future. It's the future.
Yeah. Awesome. Making it fun. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate that conversation. It was really enlightening, and I personally got a lot out of that. So thank you very much. Really
thanks,
good.
Thanks for that.
Thanks, right. guys.
Thanks again for listening. Thank you for allowing us to enter into your headspace for a little while. If you want to find out more about what the show is about, then visit our Patreon page. Just jump onto patreon.com, search for NZ Everyday Investor, and there you can actually be a part of what we're doing to help bring financial literacy into the homes of everyday people. Cheers. You've been listening to the NZ Everyday Investor, brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. I've been your host, Darcy Ungaro. Please remember to subscribe to the show, and if you'd like to learn more about what we've covered today or any of our guests, please visit us on Facebook. The NZ Everyday Investor contains information and content designed to get you to think about your investment decisions, but none of this is financial advice. Thanks for listening in, and we'll catch you next time around.